Guillotine leg drop off the top gets him just a two count. Psychosis, 25 years of age, already in his ninth year as a pro. Trained in Tijuana with Rey Mysterio Jr. and Conan.
I trained in Tijuana myself a couple times.
Boy, you sure have.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
You know, one man's going to leave this place as the winner. One man's going to leave this place as a loser.
You see, Benoit, I know you love your mother, but from what I understand, so can anybody for $2.99 a minute.
Oh! So ladies, figure out who wants to get beat up first and get in the ring.
The long-term impact of this main event will be felt for years to come in the world of professional wrestling.
Road Wild! You know, we're ready to go. Let's get it on!
Grab your plunder and open the pay window. It's time for Survey Says.
From the beach to the Black Hills, the summer of Survey Says rides on. Tonight, Place to Be Nation, we are coming to you live from Sturgis, South Dakota. I am, of course, Tim Capel, joined by my co-captain, Andy Savage Helene. We're all fake tatted up and have new fake piercings to go along with it. Andy, I'm loving your leather vest and your chaps as well. You chose wisely for this occasion.
I kind of stole Sonny Ono's hat too.
Oh, I wondered where that came from. Very good. Did you take that from him after he wrecked his motorcycle? I understand he was stung by a bee on the way in and just wiped out.
Yep.
He may need that back after the show, but that's okay. I'm already questioning my decision of denim on denim on denim for this venue tonight. But as long as I make it out of here alive, I guess that'll be a lesson learned.
Isn't that what Tony did? He always had the denim on denim.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you can look as hard as Tony Schiavone in Sturgis at the biker rally, then you're either doing something really right or really wrong.
Isn't that what they call a Canadian tuxedo, I think?
It is a Canadian tuxedo, very much, yes. Yep. So that's popular with the Hart family as well, I'd have to imagine. Yeah, Bruce Hart was rocking that at, I guess it was SummerSlam 94, I want to say. They were all decked out.
Or you might be in a Bryan Adams music video or something.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Well, coincide with the greatest song of the 80s tournament happening on placetobenation.com right now. Look at that. Look at that plug. So organic, that segue.
Yeah, you know, that was.
Not planned at all. We need to make sure people get on that because it is quite the tournament. More on that later. But in any case, we are throwing it back tonight to a show that it's almost sneakily foundational to the origins of this humble podcast because we're talking Road Wild from the year 1999. A little bit of background. I think we've talked about this before, but this show started with, you know, the germ of an idea that we had through a text exchange that we were, you know, somewhat typical of a lot of our text message exchanges, I think. Watching some old random WCW pay-per-views, happened to be from 1999, sort of busting on them, cracking up, and appreciating the occasional, you know, really cool matches that they would have. And this was not really one of those shows I think we were watching during that little stretch of time, but was one that we definitely talked about on our pilot episode. And for whatever reason, it just, I don't know, keeps coming back around. So we thought, you know, for the summer of Survey Says, topical WCW pay-per-views and events, be a good idea to cover this one just to bring things full circle with Andy and myself. You know, I guess I could tell the story again from the pilot, but first I just want to know, what's your relationship with this show? When was the first time you saw it? What do you think of it just in terms of how it stacks up to WCW's overall pay-per-view catalog.
The first time I saw it was in a tape trade on VHS. Oh, man. Like, maybe like after high school or something. But anyway, I got it in a tape trade because I used to get a lot of ECW stuff too, like from 95, 96 era. And so I was just kind of getting stuff, kind of filling holes in my collection at the time. And I really liked it because it stood out to me because it had like right away that six-man that starts it off was pretty cool. And I've always been high on like tag matches, but especially six-man tags. As far as it stacking up with the rest of WCW's prior pay-per-views, or even the ones that follow it, I think this, like revisiting it, it's, I don't know if I'd call it a great pay-per-view, but it's WCW's probably last good to great one.
Yeah, you had told me that at some point in one of the prior shows that we looked at, I think, that and it was just kind of an aside, that this was, it seemed like the last regular WCW pay-per-view, so to speak. And it gave me pause, and I thought about that for a second. And in a lot of ways, you're right, because they do go into Fall Brawl the month after this, which is just kind of bleh.
And then doesn't Russo come in and take over with Halloween Havoc?
Yeah, Halloween Havoc is Russo's first show, and he's around through the beginning of 2000. And then those early 2000 shows are just extremely unmemorable. Like, we talked about Super Brawl.
Yeah, we've talked about Super Brawl and Uncensored, right?
Yep, we talked about both of those shows from 2000. And then Russo comes back, of course, for Spring Stampede, and I guess is around through the summer, just about. And by then, I mean, you're really getting to the end of the line for WCW. I mean, yeah, Russo does leave, and they crank out a few more good pay-per-views, like at the end of 2000, into 2001. But it doesn't really feel the same. You know, it's not really the same WCW, I think, as we think of it and how other people think of it. So in a lot of ways, you're right. This is, while it's not a great pay-per-view, the last real sort of traditional WCW pay-per-view, in a lot of ways.
Maybe it's like the beginning of the end.
It is sort of the beginning of the end. I mean, pay-per-view wise, yeah. There are some notable things coming out of it, but it's one that I think is easy to overlook on the whole. Now, I've told the story before, so I'll try to keep it brief here, that I actually happened to see this one live, sort of by accident. I was on a vacation with, I think that, yeah, it was just me and my mom and our dog that year at the beach. And we got to the beach house, and I don't know what even possessed me to put the channel on, you know, the pay-per-view station, because they had a box. So it wasn't like you could even do scramble vision on this TV. And for whatever reason, I don't know if somebody had, you know, fucked with the box or what, but it came through. And without paying for it, we got this whole pay-per-view. That eventually, that feed, like, cut off later in the week for some reason. But we were able to see this whole show live as it happened. And, I mean, while my mom was not a wrestling fan, we, I guess this is kind of funny as a tangent, as we are known for here. My mom was dating this guy at the time who, like, met up with us after we had, you know, kind of gotten in and gotten settled a few hours later. And, I mean, he watched some wrestling, so he was kind of into it. But this dude, he sort of looked like, 1998 Mark Marrow, but had Hulk Hogan's bug eyes, if you can picture that. I don't know why I remember this. And his name was JR, this guy my mom is dating. Nice real nice guy, but drank too much. He was not a mean drunk or an abusive drunk or anything, just kind of a stupid drunk. He liked his beers. He just drank way too much. That one did not work out, but these are the things that you remember, you know, just because it was such an unusual thing to have seen a pay-per-view that you were not planning to or were supposed to see. So this is what's always stuck with me. I guess it's kind of a funny memory, but I don't even know if I can really call it a fond memory, but it's just those weird little details that stick out. But in any case, this is the fourth Road Wild event in Sturgis. They did 96, 97, 98. This is 99, the last year they would be in Sturgis, broadcasting live from the motorcycle rally.
Yeah, I even saw a sign in the crowd. I think it was like right before the Sid and Sting match. Somebody was holding a sign that said, "The last Road Wild of the Millennium." And then I got kind of sad because I was like, well, it was the last one ever.
Damn it.
I know.
It was right. It was two, you know, two on the money, that sign. Yeah. Yeah, the following year, they don't do Road Wild in August. They do New Blood Rising. Holy shit. And then they're gone a year after that. So, oh well. It's like 5,500 people in attendance here. That seems rather down from previous showings of this event. But having said that, I thought they did a better job of being just conscious of their audience. So you don't have like a 35-minute Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit opener, right? So they just... It's eight or nine total matches on this card, and none of them is longer than, it looks like, 13 minutes. And, I mean, it's just everybody goes out there, they do their matches, nothing super flashy, but you can tell they're sort of wanting to get out of there quick. This pay-per-view on the WWE Network, a little bit shorter than other pay-per-views I've noticed. It's not a full 3 hours. You know, most of those kind of, you get up to that 3 hour range, you get into like 2 hours, 15 minutes plus. This one's like 2:45. So not appreciably shorter, but it is. And I think that was kind of by design. What'd you make of this setting? Did it feel different to you than in other Road Wild / Hog Wilds, as this was originally known? Did it seem different in any way than other events that they had done from Sturgis?
Well, I remember seeing that. I remember 96, because I think I even maybe took a picture of my TV and sent it to you a while ago, because I can't remember when I was watching it, but it looked like they were seriously in a trailer park, because they show like, it's during like the, I remember, like, was it Steiner's and Harlem Heat? And they kind of show, it's not the hard camera side where they're always doing, or maybe they are. It just looks like there's some trailers out there and a bunch of grass. There's like, it's like the side without the crowd or something. I don't know. It's really weird. But at least this, they've got a crowd all the way around the ring. And I kind of like, it was kind of making me hungry actually, because the, hard, which you see from the every time you see from the hard camera angle, there's a hamburger stand, and I'm like, I'm hungry.
Okay, I'm glad you pointed that out. I kept getting distracted by all the banners, all the vendors out there, and I have a question for you. Maybe you'll know this. Maybe I'm really stupid, or this is a regional thing. I don't know. What are butterfly fries?
I have no idea.
Did you see that? You know, it was kind of, it was facing the hard camera all night, but it was sort of obscured by some shrubbery out in Sturgis. But there was a big-ass banner for butterfly fries. It looked like a type of thing you would see at the fair, like fair food.
Maybe that's what they call those. You know how they have the onion blossom things?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they do that, but with like a potato, like fries or something. Fries. I don't know. That's the only thing that I can think of, but I don't know I've ever seen that before. But
all right. Well, I'm glad it's not just me. It's okay. It says here, butterfly fries. This is just on Google. Or when you take a potato and thinly slice it in one continuous spiral.
So it's a spiral cut thing. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those before.
I mean, aren't those just kind of curly fries? Well, I guess if it's a whole potato and just one continual strip that you've cut.
Yeah, they always do that at the fair, but I didn't know it had a name or it was that name.
Butterfly fries. Oh, how about it? What's your? Do you have a favorite fair food? Or like festival food or anything?
I like the elephant ear or the whatever it is, like the funnel cake.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, like I guess I'm the classic funnel cake with powdered sugar. But then I always get it all over my face, and now I'd even be even more self conscious because I have a beard, and I always feel like I'm getting food in there. So yeah.
Yeah. Plus with that, it looks like, you know, what was he doing in the bathroom?
Yeah, really.
Suspicious white powder. yeah, I'm kind of the same. I think I lean funnel cake if I go for that sort of thing. There's so many varieties now of funnel cake. They've really gentrified funnel cakes. All these fancy.
Yeah, they had like the funnel cake carnival somewhere, didn't they? Like IHOP or whatever it is now.
Going crazy with these things. I mean, just give me a basic funnel cake. Come on, guys. It's the fair.
I've never had a frozen, like, or not frozen, but I've never had like a fried like Twinkie or fried candy bar, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I always see it. I think I've had like a fried Snickers or something like that, just to say I tried it. And I mean, yeah, it's really good, but extremely rich, extremely decadent. You don't really want to walk around all day eating that, but you know, it's worth trying just to say you tried it, I guess, but very much a novelty. So we're talking a lot about this show, clearly, but I felt it was important to get that out of the way because it is pretty important to this setting and a little bit distracting. But you know, if you've seen a Road Wild or Hog Wild prior to this, you kind of come in knowing what to expect. But all that is to say, I did think that the overall presentation this year at this show, they had learned from the past. You know, they knew what not to do. They had an eye towards, you know, let's kind of keep things moving, keep these people entertained.
No country concerts.
Do what?
I said no country concerts.
No country concerts. No, Travis Trace Atkins, whoever the hell it was. Clint Black, I don't know. Yeah, that was in 98. Won't find that on the network, sadly. But in any case, you don't want this crowd turning on you, really. I think that's important to keep in mind. So it is somewhat unfortunate that this was their last one, but I get why they couldn't keep doing this. I mean, I guess it was a free gate. You know, if you attended the biker rally, you could just see the wrestling show. Just seems like a bad plan. But, you know, we're not here to talk about the rise and fall of WCW. First match. You mentioned it's a six-man. Rey Mysterio, Billy Kidman are returning. Well, he'd been back, but pay-per-view return of Eddie Guerrero. They're kind of early in that Filthy Animals run against the Deadpool, Raven's new faction. Although Raven is not in the match, it's Vampiro and the ICP. This is kind of the best match on the show, right?
Yeah, actually, well, maybe the second best, but it is pretty a strong contender for the match of the show, yeah.
I think it's what you would expect from Mysterio, Kidman, Eddie. Vampiro's okay, like he could hold it together. It is kind of crazy to me that you think you would make a big deal out of ICP wrestling. Like, maybe you should try to, I don't know, try to capitalize on that a little bit more. They are minor celebrities, at least, but here they're just sort of treated like guys. They're just thrown out there, and they're honestly the secondary celebrities that are wrestling on this show, as we'll get to. So that's sort of nuts to think about. You figured they would never do something like that today. But ICP, they're not ring technicians, of course, but they sort of can bump. They don't really have much in the way of offense, but it's surprising to me as well that not only are they out here, but they're really just thrown in the ring. You know, you think Vampiro is going to do most of the heavy lifting here, but he doesn't. They're just treated like, you know, any old tag team partners for the most part. So, I don't know. I guess, you know, they had done some wrestling before, but it just goes to show WCW is like, whatever, it's a match. Just have a hot opener, do what you need to do, and get out of here. Yeah, I mean, it definitely popped me, got me enthused for the rest of this show. Kidman kind of crushes Shaggy Two-Dope with that shooting star press for the win. He often did that move awkwardly, and this was not one of his better shooting star presses. I don't know if you noticed.
I didn't notice that. There was some other stuff I noticed in the match, but...
Okay, what else you got?
There was one thing that I kind of wanted to point out, like, right away. Like, Mike Tenay was a serious, like, downgrade on the three-man booth after Dusty. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was just annoying to me. Like, when the ICP's coming out with Vampiro, and he's like, oh, well, you know, the ICP, they have what appears to be hockey jerseys on. And on the back of their jersey, it says the Great Malenko. And, you know, they took reference from Dean Malenko. They're wrestling fans. Huh? And he just, like, I don't know. It's like kind of like JR would throw out football facts or something. He's just, like, trying to, like, maybe throw out some facts and sound relatable. But he just sounds like...
You're right, the professor...
The most unhip or something. It's just not very hip, Mike Tenay.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The professor Mike Tenay shtick doesn't really play that well in this kind of context. Like, it's okay for random Nitros and Thunders and shit like that, just TV shows, where you want to have some variety in the booth, like Tony's doing play-by-play and... Bobby or whoever on color, and then Mike as the guy who's just throwing out fact after fact. You're sort of eating that up. You get into some of the trivia of it, but something like this, it's like, come on, man, nobody cares about that shit. But especially coming off of, you're right, Dusty in the booth, in these three-man booths for WCW shows. And yeah, the commentary isn't spectacular here, although I think Bobby does maintain his sobriety throughout, so kudos on him. I guess he got pretty infamously sloshed at the 96 show, which Dusty was kind of cracking up over, but his presence is missed. You're right, I think you always need Dusty for a ridiculous show like this.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too hard on, like, Mike Tenay, but I don't know. I guess I thought it was just so dorky. You know, how you're starting to describe stuff.
I hear you.
I also liked Raven, though. If you saw him, like, he didn't do a whole lot. I thought he might have played into the match a little bit more, but I liked how Ray was on the outside, and he got up in his face, and he was kind of, like, mocking him, like, crying.
So, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Kind of getting back into more of that flock mode.
So yeah.
He had a... I think earlier in the year he had been tagging with Saturn and Canyon to some extent as well, and Saturn has since gone to the Revolution faction, who we'll be seeing soon, and Canyon turned, joined the Triad. So that left Raven twisting in the wind, but he's kind of building up a new group of followers here, and I sort of dug the Deadpool. I like the name. It's a pretty cool name. Nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, I dug it too.
And he's gone soon after this. He goes back to ECW, does Raven, like, very soon after this show.
Yeah, because I was going to mention that, because I was trying to think of the timeline, because I know he showed up on that first ECW on TNN, which was late August. Wasn't there, like, a meeting where Bischoff's like, hey, if anybody wants to leave, you can just get out, and he did?
Yes. Yep.
It's like, well,
and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bischoff has a podcast now. It's called, doesn't everybody, I know. Yeah. It's called 83 Weeks. It's a Conrad special. So joining the likes of Tony Schiavone and Bruce Pritchard.
Man, that guy's almost got more shows than JT.
Yeah, really. I know. He's got quite the stable now of personalities. So... in any case, I have not listened to Bischoff's show yet. I haven't listened to any of his shows, but I would like to know if he has talked about the whole, I don't know, a lot of stories like that. Not just Raven supposedly walking out, but all these sort of wrestling urban legends that he seems to often be at the center of when they're in this period of WCW. So I check that out. But, okay, so Road Wild, this show itself happens on August 14th, 1999. As you said, the first episode of ECW on TNN was just a little bit later in August. So, I mean, we're talking maybe like a week turnaround for Raven. This is possibly his last WCW appearance. But I'm not going to commit to that. I don't want to be wrong and get dragged on Twitter. So, in any case, did you have anything else for that match, or shall we move along here?
The only thing was, is I was wondering if around that time they ever had Eddie against Vampiro one-on-one, because I like their exchanges in that match.
I think they did. I mean, they seem like they would have had to on a Nitro or Thunder.
Yeah, because even Eddie, like, I like their exchanges, and then Eddie, I think he went up to the top rope, like the Undertaker walking the top rope, and then did like a Hurricane Rana.
Yep. That was a pretty cool spot. Which looked really great. Yeah. Eddie was just jacked out of his mind here. He'd had that car accident, you know, earlier in the year, and, I mean, people were kind of doubting if he could come back at all, and if he did, it would be like, you know, a year or more. And this is, you know, we're talking about 6 months, really. And he just looks incredible in the shape of his life. You had hoped he'd maybe cleaned his act up a little bit. I don't know to what extent maybe he had or hadn't here. Certainly he would have the quote-unquote demons to battle later on as well, but... man, he makes a good showing here. I got super into Eddie Guerrero at this time period. Just a dude that I'd seen a lot of and not appreciated to the extent that I did until he was gone. And I guess I have since made the heart grow fonder, because when he came back, I was like, I'm kind of super into Eddie Guerrero now, one of my favorite wrestlers. So, and he's been that way ever since.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's like, never really been my favorite, but I've always liked him. And then in like matches like this, I'm like, shit, that guy really should be like in like my top five. I think how you'd say, he's like sneaky good.
Mm-hmm. And could have a good match with anybody, one of those types of wrestlers.
Yeah.
And there aren't many that you can say that about. So, yep. Paying tribute to Eddie here. Anytime he comes up, maybe we should do a whole... could we do a dedicated WCW Eddie Guerrero episode? I don't know.
Probably.
Let us know if you want to see that.
We can, or hear that.
Yeah. See or hear that. Yeah. Mostly hear. All right. So next match is a reunited Harlem Heat taking on Canyon and Bam Bam Bigelow from the Jersey Triad. This match, so this is the longest match on the card. by
You
know, a whole by a whole minutes. It doesn't feel like it, but according to the match times I'm looking at, this goes just over 13 minutes. It doesn't really feel like it. I mean, it's not like this match drags or anything. It's no great shakes, but it's perfectly watchable. Again, this is the reunited Harlem Heat. So I don't know about you, but I thought, I was sure that in 1998, when Booker T had his big first singles push, Stevie comes back, and then Stevie like joins the NWO, right? And it just seemed like they're building to a feud between these two, kind of doing a slow burn thing. But did you think for certain that those guys were going to feud in 98?
Yeah, yeah.
And they had already split up the Steiner brothers earlier that year. I thought they were going to get cute and do like a Booker T, Rick Steiner versus Stevie Ray and Scott Steiner tag combination thing. And it just kind of never happened. Booker got hurt the summer of 98. Stevie went off to do his own thing. Booker came back kind of late that year. I think he might even briefly go out again with injury. But anyway, Booker T has had a pretty off and on 1999. But Stevie Ray is like the last NWO member standing when you think about it. So
yeah, they even mentioned that him like leading the B team for like a long time.
Yeah, he took over the NWO B team. The NWO Elite had already dried up, but B team stuck around for a little while and everybody got picked off, but he was still there wearing the black and white until he had occasion to reunite with his brother. So we never really get we do get the feud later on, but the timing was very off. So this is Harlem Heat once again, somewhat surprisingly, but going up against the Triad. Match itself is just kind of, I don't know, it's whatever. Again, that's the story. That's going to be the story of a lot of matches here. It's not so much the work rate as it is the atmosphere on this show. And I did think that, I will say, this crowd was on somewhat better behavior for a Harlem Heat match than they had been at prior Road Wilds. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're not revving the engines. They're not, you know, they're not being too rambunctious. But it's just crazy to me that for of all shows to do a Harlem Heat reunion, you're going to pick Road Wild and Sturgis in front of a bunch of bikers.
So, like, I guess maybe they didn't learn, but they were just lucky.
Yeah, they kind of dodged a bullet there. You're right. They did not learn that lesson. Take that back. So, I don't know. Did you have anything else on this match, really?
I thought it kind of was okay. It was nice to see Bam Bam Bigelow, you know, with a belt. I thought him and Canyon were all right, but it was just kind of like maybe like a basic kind of Nitro TV match. It didn't really blow me away, but it didn't suck. It was just kind of eh.
Yeah, it did feel like a TV match. And Harlem Heat, they do win the titles here for, I don't know which number reign that is.
I was thinking about that. Aren't they like, I don't know, didn't they, it was like eight times or something like that?
Yeah. But
then I was even trying to think about how many times they would have won it.
Well, let's see.
In 96 and 97, it was tied up a while with the Outsiders and I think the Steiners.
And the Steiners, yeah.
And then Luger and like Sting had earlier in 96. So they must have traded it a lot with the Nasty Boys.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. This is their eighth reign as WCW Tag Team Champions. They will win it at least two more times, so 10 times they have that belt.
Holy shit. And then you got to think Booker T went on to win it a lot in like WWE because he won it with Gold Dust. I think he won it with Rob Van Dam or something.
With
one
Test.
Of those. Yeah, with Test.
In the early days of the invasion. So.
Yeah, because it was like TNT.
Yeah, they were trying to put that over.
For like 1 week.
Well, they also tried, who was it Billy Gunn in the Big Show that...
Oh, we're Shoguns. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Vince said something like, I don't care if you call yourselves Rudy Tootie Shit on a Stick.
Oh, God.
It was something like, it was one of those like clearly Vince not caring, which is so rare for him. But that one stands out. All right, we've drifted, but that's what we do. We have another multi-man match. So the way this card is stacked is a little bit suspect. You get all your tag stuff out of the way first, but in any event, the newly formed Revolution faction, represented here by three quarters of that group. It's Perry Saturn, Dean Malenko, and the franchise Shane Douglas. They are going against the West Texas Rednecks. That's right, still around. This iteration is Curt Hennig, Barry Windham, and Bobby Duncombe Jr. And you had Kendall Windham on the outside. Later, they would add Vincent as Curly Bill. Right, so. And then doesn't he? He becomes known as Shane.
Yeah.
I think, in the Russo run, just continuing the mocking of. So he was Vincent, and then he's Shane. So stupid.
I don't remember Curly Bill. I thought he was just Shane, but
went straight to Shane.
Yeah.
Maybe am I making that up? Let me check.
No, you're probably right because you were watching it a lot more. I was. Too deep into WWF in 99, even though I'd like to not have been now, because I think I did miss out on a lot of good stuff just because I was too deep into it.
Well, you know how I am with names, so I'm doubting myself enough that I'm hitting the Wikipedia. Okay, it does say, and I did not edit this page, I promise you, but the West Texas Rednecks, it says that he is a member, and he was called Curly Bill, so... Must have been very short-lived, but in any case, the match is a six-man tag, right? So pretty much kind of I thought a Perry Saturn showcase. So it seemed like this feud, this little mini feud, was more on the back of Saturn, where he had been having matches with various members of the West Texas Rednecks on television. Malenko and Douglas weren't really involved in it other than to be his partners here. So, I don't know. You know, being fans of Saturn as we are on this program, I liked seeing him get some shine. Very cool. He wears, I think, Wyndham's cowboy hat after the match.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So a lot of hat thievery here. You've got Sonny Onoes and Perry Saturn taking a page out of that book too. So, but yeah, the Revolution get the win. What you got on this match? Anything notable?
Hennig still looked pretty good.
He did.
There.
Yeah,
I thought
kind of
squaring off with Shane Douglas. I think they were trading stuff on the outside, and
Hennig does a good job here, just being the glue that holds this thing together.
Yeah, it was just so, like Eddie in the previous one.
That's right. Yeah, you need that anchor guy, and various other metaphors that I might use. The network dub for the Revolution's theme is pretty rough. That's. I mean, not that their original theme was anything, you know, that'll knock your socks off, but it's like you can tell this is a bullshit dub, which we will hear a lot of throughout this show. But they do have I Hate Rap for the West Texas Rednecks. Did not dub over that. So, and I should also point out, I'd be remiss in sleeping on ICP, the Deadpool, in that opener. They had their original theme as well, which was called Take It. I think we talked about that on a previous episode. I was sure that that was not on the network when we talked about it. Like, I was certain of it. But sure enough, it's there. So,
yeah, like that's a good segue into the next match, I think. I think with the cat and his the awful dub. My God, I hate that every time.
Yes. The cat. What did they do? What did they do to his great little James Brown tune, you know? It's just
It sounds like Sanford and Son or something.
It sounds like Sanford and Son, or it sounds like what did I compare it to? Something that the New Day would play on Francesca too.
Yes.
I mean, it really does. It's that bad, and it's just it feels like something that they came up with in the editing room is just kind of like a temporary. They're like, okay, this is a placeholder. We're gonna find something better, and they just never did. So, my God, what a mess. But yeah, it's the cat, Ernest Miller, with his manager, Sonny Ono, taking on Buff Bagwell.
Oh my God, I loved the match was okay, but I loved everything before the match. It was awesome.
Oh man,
like,
yeah.
Like the cat coming out, and he's like, you know, talking trash, and then like Buff comes out. And he's got the microphone, and he keeps stealing it away from him.
He does it like three
like
times.
Two or three times, yeah. And then, but then Buff has like the dumbest like you know comeback. He's like, "Well, I think if you know what I mean, yeah, like if you know what I mean." I'm like, "I don't know what you mean," but he's like, "Everybody here wants you to kiss my ass."
It was really bad. The cat was he was going all in on that. Drawing that white supremacy heat. He I mean, it's a little bit uncomfortable, yeah, but he's got like the gloves with the Confederate flag. Yes. And he like keeps throwing it up and taunting the crowd. Like he is really, I mean, he's you know, whatever they had kept in reserve for the Harlem Heat match, I think Ernest Miller brings it out of this crowd. Very much by design. So, he knew what he was doing. I mean, this is, you know, the cat is not quite the cat as we will come to know him, but he's still a pretty good showman.
Yeah.
Showman. And he's putting that together here. I did feel like, you know, in a way, this is somewhat of a demotion for Buff Bagwell. I mean, he does get the win, but it's in a way that it's sort of like, yeah, we'll put you over, but you're going to look really weak. He just, he wins with like a roll up, right? Where there's a distraction with Sonny Ono that backfires and he gets a schoolboy on the cat and that's it. So he looks really weak even in winning. And then they kick his ass after the match.
There was one thing I was thinking that, like, maybe I'll even cut it out of the show. I don't know. But, like, when I was, like, maybe I was too distracted by, like, Sonny Ono coming out. But I was thinking, like, if he was around now or even back then, they should have had him like that, what was it, like that, I think his name was Chow in The Hangover.
Oh, God.
I could totally see him doing a character like that, especially if he was in WWE. They probably would have totally ran with that.
Yeah, I could. Wow, they probably. I don't know that today they do a character like that, but there was definitely a period of time. Like, the Hangover movies were like, what, 2008 through 2000.
Yeah, so it might have been the PG era where they were really into the PG.
There was a window where they probably would have. Well, I mean, they did Jimmy Wang Yang. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I mean, not that that was
who actually dressed like Sonny Ono in that match, right?
He did. Yes, he was cosplaying as Road Wild Sonny Ono.
Yeah, I love that hat. I love that hat.
It
It's good stuff. Yeah, very very fitting.
He looks like one of the bikers in like Pee Wee's Big Adventure. You know, when they're at the bar and he's doing the tequila dance.
Yes, that's great. Oh my God! Again, I just thought Buff looked pretty bad even going over here, and it made me wonder, like, who did he piss off backstage that he is. Not that, I mean, it sounds like I'm being disrespectful towards Ernest Miller, but the fact is, he was not really a prominent character at the time, and this is kind of, in a lot of ways, his big coming out party as a heel, Ernest Miller, where he had done these little spots here and there, but not with a lot of consistency, but this is when I think of him turning on that persona a lot more. And I think Buff, the month before, didn't he have that that shitty-ass boxing match with Roddy Piper?
Yeah. Yeah, but I think I was going to say, too, that you just kind of put like a thought in my head that he – like, I didn't think about him getting bumped down the card on this show. But now that you said that, I kind of think you're right because the top matches seem kind of stacked. Or at least you had Goldberg back. The Macho Man was back. Hogan, Nash – Sid, Sting, yeah, the U.S. title match that's like still to come, and then so yeah, it's like Buff's kind of, he must have got knocked down a little bit because you have all those guys coming back, but he was in that one, like they showed clips of it on maybe on that Great American Bash or something where there was like a cool tag match with like the Triad against like Benoit and Saturn, and like Piper was in there, like.
Mm-hmm.
I think Buff was in there too.
Yeah, it was. I think it was right before Shane Douglas came in, so it wasn't the Revolution yet. But it was basically Buff was a big part of that whole youth movement thing where they were fighting like all the old fucks. Where yeah, it was Benoit and Malenko, Saturn had joined them. Buff was in there too, and they were probably going against. I know Flair was in it. I know Piper was in it. Probably yeah. DDP.
Yeah, it was like probably, the Jersey Triad guys.
It was like an 8-man tag, and there was a spot where they all the faces put the figure four on the heels at the same time. And yeah, Buff was kind of leading the charge in that. So it feels like he got knocked down. Something happened. I'm thinking of all the scenarios, just all the shit that happened with WCW talent and various run-ins they would have with either hotel staff or valets or flight attendants or whatever, and you know how they would get in trouble. So I think there must have been one of those incidents, and he kind of has a hard time coming back from this. I mean, he never really gets to the top of the card in WCW. Doesn't really win any singles titles. I don't think he wins even one singles championship, Buff Bagwell. Not that I'm saying he should have, it just kind of surprises me. In any case, was this, I don't think this was the year that I kind of joked about Sonny Ono wrecking his motorcycle after getting stung by a bee. That did happen, but I think it was at the 98 Road Wild. I mean, I guess that could have ended a lot worse for him than it did, but it just makes for kind of a crazy story now. So why don't we take a look at one more match here before we go into our break, and that is for the United States Heavyweight Championship. Diamond Dallas Page challenging, actually, for a change, Chris Benoit. It felt like these two were feuding for like the entire summer in some form or fashion of 99. They did the tag stuff with either Benoit and Malenko or Benoit and Saturn versus various combinations of the Triad. So here you get kind of the singles offshoot of that feud. And this is going to tie a bow on it for a while. These two, Benoit and DDP, I've talked a lot about. I think they had really good chemistry in all their matches. I think they liked working together. Did you have a lot of time for this one? Did you enjoy this match?
Oh, yeah. I think this was, when you said you thought the six-man that opened up the show was the best on the card, I think this might be the best one on the card. Because I knew it was good, and I even watched it, what, about 4 months ago? And I thought it was good, but then it just really surprised me. Something just clicked with me. I think it was DDP, and he takes the referee's belt. He starts whipping a...
I was wondering when that would come into play.
Yeah, he starts whipping him, and then he even almost hangs him. And then I kind of was like, should I even say he's hanging Benoit with a belt? Because isn't that kind of a little... I'm not even going to go there. But
I had the same thought. It kind of puts you in that mindset of, ooh.
Yeah, because then it kind of took me out of the match, but I still liked it. Like, it took me, like, right out of it, and I'm like, but DDP, like, there was something I was thinking about during this match, and I was like, he was a heel before, you know, when he started. He was a heel for a long time, and it wasn't until the NWO came around, two years before this show. So he'd only been a face for, like, 2 years. But it seemed like now, going back to a heel, he was even better. And I think, like, maybe they should have ran with heel DDP like this a lot longer than they did, because it just seemed like he was so awesome at playing the heel. But then he had he had the awesome character work. Then he had the awesome ring work that maybe he had kind of built up, you know, after wrestling Savage and Hall and all of those guys a lot, you know. I think it upped his game. Yeah. And it just seemed like the best of both worlds right there.
Yeah, that's a good point. He is DDP good at playing that scumbag heel type. And this does feel like the main event version of that very mid-card heel character. I'm thinking like the tail end of that heel run, like in that 96 stretch where he's doing all this stuff with Johnny B. Badd. I mean, that was a good character for Paige, for anybody really, but he had just started putting it together in the ring, like he said, around that time. And it was an effective, very effective mid-card type of act for him. And now he's just so much better. He's really got all the ingredients in the makings of a superstar that they've built him up as, and he buoyed his success as a fan favorite into this now extremely shithead heel role. So it does suit him well. I wasn't, you know, as a big DDP mark, I wasn't fond of his heel turn earlier in the year, but I can't deny that he's good at it, and we get a good match out of them. And again, as you alluded to, a bit of a role reversal where, you know, Benoit's always kind of been a face anyway in WCW, but he was like more of a tweener leaning heel in his 98 matches with DDP, who was like the mega babyface. And here, this is very much a sympathetic character that Benoit is portraying, and, you know, DDP is anything but. So, you know, you're really pulling for Benoit. He had just won the U.S. title off of David Flair on Nitro. People probably want to forget that David Flair U.S. title run. But, you know, Benoit, that was sort of him winning the big one before he won the big one, because it was his first major singles championship, and people were pretty into that at the time, myself included. I really enjoyed that sequence where he hits the bridging German suplexes.
He
does three in a row, but he doesn't pop them off the way he does the rolling Germans. He tries to pin DDP after each one, and I'm just like, good Lord, no wonder he broke his neck doing shit like this.
Yeah, because I thought that was so cool, because I know that, like, yeah, they'd run the rolling Germans, but never, like, into a into, like, near falls like that.
Yep. And Benoit gets put over really strong, where it's like the rest of the triad comes in, tries to interfere. He fights them off, and they even show his teammates in the Revolution, like, watching, I would say backstage, but there's not really a backstage on the show. But they're watching on the monitors. We see them. They're kind of starting to run out, and you're thinking, you know, maybe they should come out and help their guy here. But they don't. Benoit successfully fends off the triad, gets the very clean pin over DDP with the flying headbutt, which he didn't, I don't feel like he won a whole lot with that in this stretch. So puts over him, puts over the move. Good, solid U.S. title defense for the newly crowned champion in Chris Benoit. So while it is a little bit hard to talk about, hard to watch, taken as a match, pretty good. And, you know, I just have a hard time. I never know what to do with Chris Benoit matches, so I guess I don't really call it the best match on this show, but you could certainly make that argument. It was, you know, kept me engaged. And if anything, I kind of wanted it to be a bit longer, and that's kind of the through line here with, you know, some of these matches we've talked about already and that we'll see later. Is they end, I won't even say abruptly, because we get good finishes, but they're the type of finishes where you think, and maybe this is me talking through 2018 eyes, that, okay, we're going to get a false finish here. We're going to, you know, we're going to get a kick out, and they're going to keep going another, you know, 5 minutes or so. And I don't know, you know, you bite on some of those false finishes, and here it's a little bit of the opposite, where I think, I don't think that's going to be enough to put it away. Oh, wait, yes, it is. So, but that's fine. I mean, it's not like they make the matches worse, really. It just is not necessarily what I expect from, you know, modern day wrestling, at least. Why don't we head into a break? And we're going to come back here, run down the rest of the show. But for now, get yourself some relief. Try to steer clear of the porta potties, because you know, that's going to come into play later on as well. So use caution, but get yourself some refreshment as well, some butterfly fries, and a doctor slice. And we'll be right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey dudes, Hulk Hogan's running wild on the WCW, and I want to tell you about it right now. Call the Hulk Hogan Hotline, 1-900-737-HULK. It's got 8 incredible options, like Beat the Hulk, Hulk Trivia, and one of my great Hulk messages. There's always something new on the Hulk Hogan Hotline. Call now, 1-900-737-HULK. Call costs $1.49 per minute. Kids get parents' permission. Charges will appear on the parents' phone bill.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling. Survey says is back, back in black, the Black Hills of Sturgis, that is, where we are talking WCW Road Wild 1999. And before we get back to action here, we do have some administrative business to attend to, as we often do on this program. I believe we do have a new Survey Says Fan of the Month. So, Andy, I would like to turn it over to you to do the honors. Who do we have as our fan of this month?
This month, I'm going to have to give it to one of my buddies, Luke Newhouse. He's been listening for quite a while, especially recently. He's given me a lot of feedback on the WWF versus WCW episodes, where we've been comparing wrestlers. And he's been kind of making a case for the controversial ones, where I've been going one way. He's been making a case for the other direction, but I just told him, hey, it's my show.
Too bad. Yeah, congratulations to Luke Newhouse. I was never entirely sure how to pronounce his last name, even though I feel like I vicariously know the guy through the comments on a lot of your Facebook posts. I know that you guys are friends, and perhaps we should become friends as well. So
he's also a resident of Pekin, Illinois.
Is your favorite town? Okay. A Pekin resident. So
a Pekinite. Yeah, I think
a Pekinite.
Or are they a Pekinese? I don't know. That would be a good question.
Oh God, that about broke me. Excellent. That makes it, now we have to make it official because it's even better. But thank you, Luke, for your feedback on our Who Booked Them Better episodes. I'm really glad that has succeeded in generating a good bit of discussion. That's the idea of those. And congratulations and welcome to the Survey Says Fan of the Month Club. Very, very good stuff. We will perhaps connect on Facebook. That'll be cool. All right. Can we go back to Hog/Road Wild here? I feel like we should be making – we need Greg Phillips here for past guest of the show, Greg Phillips, of course, our dear friend, to make the Hogan motorcycle noise.
Like that, you know?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. I don't know if that's a cat in heat or a motorcycle or what, but Anyway, we're going to rev our engines here because our next match, it's kind of a big one. You know, you could perhaps call this a triple main event pay-per-view because it is Sid Vicious, the Millennium Man, taking on Sting, as Tony Schiavone would say. It's an all right match between these two. Once again, I think continuing the theme of ending a little abruptly, a little prematurely perhaps, but I liked what they were doing in the ring. You know, Sting keeps going back to the Stinger Splash, and eventually Sid kind of suckers him in, catches him as he's going for that second or third splash right around the throat, takes him up for the choke slam, and that is it. Big win for Sid Vicious here, and not the first time Sid and Sting had had kind of a high-profile pay-per-view match. And I had mentioned on our last episode with Jenny talking the tag team main event from Beach Blast 93, where you had Sting and Davey Boy Smith against Sid and Vader, that I thought Sting had good chemistry with Sid Vicious, even though their matches weren't always the best in the world.
Yeah, he's doing that same thing to start off the match, because I think they kind of did it in that tag match where he's really rocking like Sid with the strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like almost trying to take the big man off his feet, and it kind of gets you into it.
Yep. Being doing the House of Fire thing, you know, yeah. Relying on his quickness. It does feel a little bit like old school Sting, and I think it's well documented. Our thoughts on the man called Sting, we dedicated an entire episode to him, where his 1998 return kind of sucked, kind of was not there as far as being a worker, but he turned it on again in 99. Like, this is Sting actually motivated and working hard. So I did enjoy the energy of this match. It's not like it drags at any point, certainly. Sting gets some big moves as well.
Yeah, the one spot I liked was where Sid's actually kind of up in the corner, like across the top ropes in the corner, and like Sting's like kicking him, and he's kind of like bouncing up and down on that.
Yeah, that was a cool spot too. And Sting does hit a superplex on Sid, yeah. Which is pretty impressive. And once again, I can't emphasize enough the very clean win by Sid Vicious here.
That kind of shocked me, but I think maybe they were building up that Millennium Man. So I guess that's why Sid got the clean win like that. But it kind of shocked me at first.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I think they were going for, is they're starting the big push, the big singles push for Sid. He came back. He was part of Macho Man's entourage. Had a pretty awesome return, though, where he power bombs Kevin Nash at the end of the Nash Savage match. I believe it was at Great American Bash. So immediately he like looks awesome, and he's back, and he's Sid again. So now he's kind of split off from Macho Man, doing his own thing, and he starts his he'd already started actually his win streak gimmick, and they're playing coy with it, where they're keeping tabs like on the number of wins, but they're very much working that. And I think the idea is that Sid is supposed to be mocking Goldberg, calling out Goldberg, but the announcers maybe don't do enough to say that, hey, this is bogus, he hasn't really gotten this many wins, blah blah blah. But I don't know, they were maybe trying to have it both ways with that whole deal. But, yeah, I mean, the idea is they are building him up now, leading to a feud with Goldberg that perhaps we'll get into on another occasion here. But I always have time for Sid, a motivated Sting as well, which he was this year. And if anything, I've said it before, but I could have gone for another like 5 minutes here. They were doing some fun stuff. So in any case, keeping it moving here, we get this match confounds me a bit. Goldberg and Rick Steiner.
Yeah, because you were talking about Buff getting. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, yeah, it's weird that Buff got bumped down, but Rick Steiner got bumped up.
Big time, right? So we've got a heel Rick Steiner, which he had turned heel earlier in the year. He had, you know, talk about Sting in Great American Bash. They had that somewhat infamous dog attack match.
Oh, God.
I believe that was at Great American Bash. Rick Steiner is kind of inexplicably getting a big heel push here. I don't even remember when exactly or how or why he turned heel, but I know he turned heel earlier in the year. Again, they did that match with Sting, and they're just sort of trying to put him over as the badass, but it's still Rick Steiner, so it doesn't really work.
Is that Kevin Sullivan booking or something doing it?
I guess so, yeah. This is, I think Sullivan probably is booking this show. I mean, they always went back to him when things went tits up as far as, you know, Nash was the booker for a while, and they went back to Sullivan. And they got Russo, and, of course, that was a debacle, so they went back to Sullivan. So I think that's the case. But who wanted Rick Steiner as sort of this almost main event level heel? He had started palling around with Sid Vicious. They were their own little group, which is, you know, not really what I want to see Sid doing. But I will say that Rick's very open disdain for this crowd is a bit impressive. He's flipping them off on the way to the ring. Gets a pretty audible fuck you in there, which is not bleeped out in any fashion. And then it's taking on Goldberg, which you figure, you know, Goldberg needs to really just smash this guy. And it's nuts because while this is a very short match, it's like 5 minutes, Rick Steiner dominates. And in a way that, even though Goldberg at this point has had competitive matches, you know, you think about the DDP match at Halloween Havoc in 98, he had been served his first loss to Nash, of course. So he was having real matches, not just squashes. But of all people to have a really competitive match with Goldberg, it's fucking Rick Steiner. And as you know, Steiner starts wearing him out with the he takes Goldberg's knee brace and is using it as a weapon, just beating him down. I'm just like, what is this? Why are we doing this? Why is Rick Steiner getting so much in this match against Goldberg, of all people? So I don't get that one. And it's not something that has really been talked about, but it really threw me. I mean, Goldberg does get the win, of course, but I just thought Steiner was on offense way, way, way too much, even though this is a short match. It's pretty absurd. So did you have any takeaways from this one?
Yeah, I just kind of thought it was weird, too, and just Rick Steiner being, like, that high on the card. But I did like, not about the match, but I did like the little video package where they show Sid ambushing Goldberg with, like, a shovel. And I thought those guys could have been... like, if you had Sid and Rick Steiner as, like, a crazy tag team. Well, they're already crazy anyways, but I mean...
yeah.
If they had more of, like, a... If they had more time to team up, you know, they could do some crazy promos.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they did tag on Nitro off and on a good deal in this summer and going into the fall. But this Rick Steiner push, it keeps going for a while. Like, he wins the TV title after this.
I remember now, too, that he was, like, the U.S. champ on that, what was it? Or he was, like, the U.S. champ near the end of WCW, and then Booker T beat him, right?
Yeah, I think he was, yeah, Rick Steiner, yep, because Scott was the world champion, and Booker ends up with both belts on the last Nitro, yep. So, God, it's pretty ridiculous here, but in any case, I guess if Scott Steiner can't be on your card, you'll settle for Rick. Maybe that's the thinking. I'm not sure what was going on with Scott. He might have been suspended, actually. This was when he called Ric Flair an old piece of shit or something like that. And
oh, probably.
Got himself suspended. Anyway, we move into what is kind of one of our co-main events, which is Randy Savage taking on Dennis the Worm Rodman.
Is this Randy Savage's last pay-per-view match ever?
It certainly is for WCW. I know he did some stuff for TNA later on, but yeah, this is it for him in WCW on pay-per-view. He makes like two more appearances, I want to say, on television. But yep, that's really his last match in WCW. I'll put it that way. Wow, what a footnote to his career, right? I don't know that I really realized that before. This, of course, being Rodman's third consecutive year working a summer pay-per-view match. Normally, you saw Dennis Rodman at Bash at the Beach in 97-98. And he got pushed out to Road Wild here.
Yeah, it's just weird.
It is weird because it doesn't feel – it almost feels like an afterthought. It's not – it doesn't get the build of his prior pay-per-view appearances. You almost feel like it was just this, just a contractual thing where maybe it was a payer – play situation where they had to use him or he was owed whatever money they had promised regardless, so they had to give him something.
I was even thinking that maybe it was just because it seems like he's there every summer, so mm-hmm. maybe yeah, they had him booked.
Yep, we gotta pay him, so we better come up with something. That is not based on anything, just pure speculation on my part. Just seems plausible. Well, it's not as much of a brawl as you kind of want it to be. You know, you want more from something like this. I mean, there are some fun spots. You know, the infamous porta potty where Savage stuffs Rodman into the rather conveniently placed porta potty and tips it over on the side, and we get the the visual of all the filth running out of it. And Rodman just getting soaked.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, I remembered a porta potty playing a part in that match. But then it's like they go down that ramp, you know, backstage, and I'm like, what? They just have a porta potty just kind of like randomly, like right there. Like, who would go and take a shit and then, like, you know, they're like, like they're like, you know, in proximity. They'd probably smell back there. But yeah. Then I'm like, oh, well, maybe it's just kind of like how they would set up those concession stands randomly to be used in a brawl. So I'm like, maybe it's just a thing that's like empty and they just set it there just like 5 minutes ago just so they could knock him into it. But then no, then the shit starts falling out. And I'm like, oh my God, it's fucking real. Because you see it like pouring out and then you even see like chunks or something.
You see chunks, yes.
Yeah. Not to get too graphic, but it's like, fuck. But then I was like, did they gimmick that?
All right, what do you think? Is that gimmicked shit?
I don't know. WCW doesn't seem like that. Like they would gimmick shit. Like they would actually really like have him. But then I'm like, fuck, Dennis Rodman? He went in a porta potty. That guy's got to get some kind of award for, like, you know, even doing that.
I mean, yeah, he couldn't have, whatever they're paying for, would he sign up for something like that? I mean, he doesn't have to do this. My God.
So maybe it is. Maybe it is gimmick shit. Then it's like,
yeah,
like lemonade or something.
Do you think it was? Do you think it was supposed to be gimmick shit? But WCW being kind of the carny assholes that they are, it's a rib and it's actual real shit. So it's shoot shit that is now soaked Dennis Rodman, soaked through his jeans. Oh God, it's Tony Schiavone sounded legit grossed out calling it too. Like he was like, I don't know how to. He was like gagging through his commentary. What can you say about 1999 Randy Savage? He is a fucking madman. It's like midlife crisis Savage, and he seems to be trying to overcompensate where he was out for so long. Like, he was gone for almost a year when he got hurt in 98. So he comes back crazy juiced out of his mind, and he has more hair than he had before, so that's a little suspect. And he's got the side piece of Gorgeous George, who, she's like 19 or 20 years old, for real. And that's a little uncomfortable. He's not taking as much of his elbow drop on his knees as he did before, because he's kind of more protective now after his injury. So he's totally crushing people with that move. I mean, people are complaining of broken ribs, getting the wind knocked out of him. Like, they are eating shit on that move, and he is just taking none of it. So I feel like he was destined to have a very short comeback here, and sure enough, you know, this being his last show, had a very, very brief stretch in 99 that is so very weird for me to look at. How much 99 Randy Savage have you seen?
I've seen the pay-per-view matches, you know, where I think like Bash at the Beach was the title match, but it was in the tag team match, and then he wrestled, like, I think Nash, yeah, like Great American Bash, and I've seen like some like really random stuff that I saw on TV at the time, but I think that's not even his last appearance, because didn't he show up in a battle royal with the New Blood and the and the Millionaires Club, and he just randomly shows up in that, and then that's it.
Yeah, he shows up in that, and I think right after he does cut a promo where he effectively quits, where he says, "I'm out of here," basically. But yeah, he was briefly involved in that Millionaires Club angle. So I don't know if they wanted to do more with him or there was any kind of real plan, but, you know, like so many things, it just dies on the vine. And WCW, I do feel like character-wise, Savage and Rodman ought to make for a good pairing. Like, they really should complement each other just for how outlandish they are.
It's like they should be teaming up or something, not fighting each other.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them as a team, and then, you know, possibly splitting off, having some kind of disagreement. Gorgeous George is very much at the center of this feud, and you know, this starts off with some pretty uncomfortable mic work from Rodman, demanding to know where his quote bitch is. And Savage responding that he's going to make Rodman his bitch tonight. Then Rodman says something like, "I do my shit outside. Let's get this thing started." And they they go. So it starts off kind of a train wreck. It's already going off the rails, but then just sort of becomes your typical garbagey type of street fight situation. Not very long, but in this case, unlike some other matches on the card, I don't know that I necessarily wanted to see more of this. But maybe they could have done some different spots. Because for what it is, it's not super memorable the way you would want a Randy Savage-Dennis Rodman match to be. Just think about how that looks and sounds on paper. But I will say this is maybe my mom's favorite professional wrestling match. again, watching this at the beach, you know, my mom, not a big wrestling fan, of course, but she remembers Randy Savage very well, and certainly everybody knows Dennis Rodman. So she definitely got a kick out of that that porta potty spot. I mean, that kind of still comes up today sometimes if the subject of wrestling is floated. So
floated and shit. Oh God.
Yeah. Oh, I want to know the background. This is another one maybe for Conrad and his stable of podcast miscreants. Somebody's got to ask if that was gimmicked shit. Or if it was shoot shit. Someone must know that. All right. Our last match on the card is not Hollywood, but Hulk Hogan, the WCW champion, defending against Kevin Nash. It is a career versus career match, if you can believe it. Yes, in 1999. Look, the match itself is nothing. This is Hulk Hogan back in the red and yellow, which he had already turned face earlier in the year. He had, but he was still doing the Hollywood thing. He was just, it was just as a face, and it was like a week before this show on that Nitro. He actually went back to the old school red and yellow. So this is, you know, Hogan doing the Hogan shtick. If you've seen one Hulk Hogan match, you've seen them all. You know what you're going to get here. Thought the Hulk up segment a little bit rushed. So
it was a big styles clash with those guys, wouldn't you say? Nash and Hogan.
Sort of. I mean, you could look at it as Hogan versus the big power man. The big power heel type character, but at the same time, when you think of that Hogan formula, it's usually a big fat guy, you know? And Nash, while he's big, physically imposing, he's not a big fat guy. And he's also kind of shitty on offense. You know, the joke about him having all three moves, including the hair flip or whatever, that Jim Cornette is so fond of saying.
I think Nash kind of works well more with guys like Brett, Sean,
even
Scott Hall too. Kind of this guys who are like who are smaller than him and can bump for him, whereas mm-hmm. Hogan's not really going to do that. You know, that's not his kind of. So that's why it's kind of like the styles clash, I think.
Right, and it is a lot of, you know, there's a long headlock, and then you know you get some chin locks in there, and the boot to the corner, you know, all the tired ass shit that Nash has been doing, and it doesn't play well against this traditional version of Hulk Hogan. So does not make for an entertaining match. I am a little bit surprised it took them this long to do a just straight up Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash singles match. Although you think about it, when else were they going to do it? You know, we tried with the finger poke of doom. So here we go with, I don't know, is this the apology for that? I think we're all kind of wanting to put that out of our minds by this time.
See, like, I think they almost, it seemed like at least in the commentary when they started the show, they almost kind of hyped it up like that because they're like, it's Hogan and Nash, you know. They had like Nash laid down for him before in the past. Like, here's their big match now, and it's going to like be a retirement match, and it's going to dictate wrestling for the future.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying. They're trying to get this thing over, and
it seems like they should have went with the new guard or whatever. Even though Nash isn't maybe much of the new guard, they should have stuck with their guns with pushing the newer guys who they were establishing.
Yeah, I mean, they had something with you know, the Revolution, Benoit and Malenko breaking off with from the Horsemen. It seemed like there was potential to that, and it kind of just fizzled. While those guys do okay as far as achieving some singles success, it seemed like they were being positioned as main eventers. You're right, and that's not going to be the.
Or I was even meaning the new guard is in like Sting, DDP, and Goldberg, those guys. But they were really pushing him to the title in like 97, you know, 98. And then he just kind of drops back to being like a mid card and he doesn't really like stay there. But here he is. He's like fired up in 99 and he's having good matches, with Sid and Goldberg. And then you even have Goldberg who's back and he got the title. And then it just kind of didn't go anywhere. So it's like, if maybe they were kind of thinking like their back was to the wall with WWF kind of turning and winning the ratings for so long, and they're like, all right, well, we're just going to go with what's established. We're going to go with Hogan. We're going to go with Nash. I think they should have kept building on what they were doing.
Yeah, I hear you. It's kind of a microcosm of WCW as a whole in 1999 with just real stop-start booking where it seems like they're onto one thing and then for whatever reason that gets scuttled and they try to go in another direction and that doesn't work. And look at how they played hot potato with the world title. DDP winning it for the first time. Way back in early spring Stampede, loses it in short order. They put it on Sting, and he wins it back for second time on the same night, that very famous Nitro. Pretty cool to pop a rating, but DDP doesn't get much of a reign, you know? They job him out to Nash a month later. Nash only has it for 2 months, and it goes to Savage, of all people. And Savage drops it to Hogan the next night on Nitro. Just, what are we doing? You know, what's the direction here? Who do you want your champion to be? Who do you want to build this company around? And this is twice that Randy Savage has not just had a 24-hour title reign, but has dropped it to Hulk Hogan the next night. So that very specific sequence of events is, it's mind-boggling to me. And I don't get it. I know that these guys are trying to be protective of their spots, and it's that very old-school mentality at work. Hogan and Nash are just these master politicians, but what are they worried about? You know, it's not like they have long careers ahead of them. They've made their money. They're set for life. Even if they don't necessarily care about the future of the company, it's just, why not kick your feet up at this stage, you know? I take it you didn't love this one, did not find it to be a five-star classic.
Nah, it's like, it's basically like a WCW show. Yeah, you have the hot undercard, and then it kind of cools as it goes.
Yep. I mean, we're used to shitty main events.
So it's basically classic WCW right there.
It really is. It very much is. Gosh, that's our show. How about that? Road Wild 1999 in the books. Final thoughts. I'll just say that it's an easy show to watch, isn't it? This went by pretty fast for me. I don't know about you, but it moves along nicely. I don't know, the match order is a little bit wonky, but it moves quick. Nothing really overstays its welcome. If anything, you wanted to see more of some of these matches. So, yeah, while it's a footnote, I do think that in a lot of ways you're right that it's the beginning of the end. If you're tracking these things in terms of WCW pay-per-views, kind of the last real normal pay-per-views as you had come to know them from World Championship Wrestling. Final thoughts from you.
It's not bad. It's not great. It's just, yeah, like I said, like a classic show. You know, and I pop for good tag team wrestling, and I think I had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have that going for it. You're right. Yep. So, all in all, I think that will let us close the book on Road Wild 1999. The last. Sadly, going to be the last Road Wild, but maybe we will come back and look at this. We didn't do a pay-per-view series on this, of course, but we could look at some of the other shows in this lineage, maybe. It's always interesting to go back to Sturgis and just take the temperature of the crowd on these different years. So, Andy, would you like to promote anything on the social, on social media, where they can find you or correspond with Survey Says on social media?
Survey _ Says on Instagram, or if you see our posts on a place to be when we got a show post, I don't know. If you're listening to the show and you like it, leave a comment, and we appreciate it.
Hit us up on the gram. I am now an Instagram user. Can you believe it? I don't think I will ever post any real content. But I am following a lot of people and a lot of concepts and a lot of shows, such as WCW Survey Says.
So you're just kind of lurking, like in the old Blog of Doom days, where you were kind of just hanging out but didn't really comment.
That's right. You know how I do it. Keep it in incognito mode until I feel the need to make my presence felt. I think right now people probably see my profile and think it's a Russian bot, and that's very much by design. That's good. That's how I like it. And if I feel the need to come out of the shadows, I will. But yes, I am Psyche68 on the gram. That's Cyke68 at Psyche68 on Twitter as well. I am quite active on Twitter, or at least I try to be. So if you want to see retweets of my various podcasts or my friends' podcasts, then hit me up on Twitter. On that front, you can also hear me on the sister feed, Place to Be Nation Pup, where I co-host Talkin' Pup with Jennifer Smith, the guest on our last episode. Also on Place to Be Nation Pup, I need to stop saying that, it's going to kill my voice. We have the Marvel Age podcast. That's me, our fearless leader, Nick Duke, Russell Sellers, and the manager, Todd Weber, going through the chronology of Marvel Comics year by year. So we are through the year 1965. As of this recording, going to move into 66. I feel like the first part of 1966 will have dropped on Marvel Age by the time you're hearing this episode of Survey Says. So look for me there. If you're a comics fan, if you're a Marvel fan, just a lot of fun to do. That is on Place to Be Nation Pop. Okay. I guess that about does it. We are not desperately out of time, but we're done. We did very good on time, I feel like. And next up, oh, look at this. It is Monster Vision on TNT with Joe Bob Briggs. We're going to be watching The Faculty. Oh, it's a 1998 favorite. I guess we've gotten the rights to it here in 1999. It's very good. Check that out on Joe Bob's Monster Vision. And with that, I feel there's nothing more to say, but we gotta go!